I've always said, you know, it's inspiring you. It's to get them, to help them to see beyond where they are now and to give them a glimpse into what it is that God has for them in the future. Since we have Youth Sunday on the fourth Sunday instead of the fifth Sunday, that means I get to talk to you guys here as opposed to in class. So today, I wanted to kind of take it from a different perspective. I noticed that whenever I've done sermons in the past, it normally comes a lot from a male person in the Bible. Maybe it's because I'm male. I don't know. So I purposely went to find one of our female heroines in the Bible to see what it is that I could learn about finding our journey, about taking the road that takes us to where God wants us to be. And in that, I found Ruth. Now, for most of us, Ruth talks about, you know, I've heard the story of Ruth from the conception of you know, relationships and things like that. And then that's true. It is still a very much a relational book. But when you look at from where she started to where she ended, it is very much a journey. It is very much about a person who just had the decision to take between one of two roads. She could have stayed where she was, or she could have taken a different path. So, from Ruth today, I want to talk about taking the King's highway. Taking the King's highway. Now, if you go into the book of Ruth, you learn about the King's highway. And this was one of the reasons why I said I had so much fun. Because there were so many things that I just learned, you know, as I was going through. Whenever I heard the King's highway, I always thought of an old song. You know, walking up the King's highway. Y'all heard that, right? And I always thought, all right, well, you know, this is just, you know, walking towards Jesus and all that. I didn't know there was an actual King's highway. He was like, really? Like, where is that? Okay. If you remember the story of Naomi and Ruth, once they had to leave Moab, well, that was the path that they had to take to get back to Canaan. They had to go up the King's highway. Now, for Ruth, this was a very different type of decision. Now, we don't know whether or not the King's highway had tolls, but for the sake of, you know, my metaphor, I kind of need them. So would y'all allow me some allowance? You know, I need some creative license if it's okay. Right. There's a little bit of a tax on the highway, okay? So youth, I want you to imagine that you are in the specially created car that God has placed you in. Trust me, it is not a hoopty. It has more gadgets in it than you could possibly imagine. Probably you haven't figured out everything that it can do yet. It has a supercharged engine. Turbo with nitros in it, but it takes a little bit of the right tampering in order to get it to go. It is a luxury vehicle. If you look at yourself as anything less than that, you're not looking through God's eyes at what he sees when he sees you. So I want you to imagine this luxury vehicle that you're in, and I want you to start to mosey down this King's highway. And as you start to mosey down, one of the first tolls that you're going to come into is called commitment to God results in richly rewards. What do I mean by that? If you read the first chapter of Ruth, specifically the 16th and 17th, and what did I do with my glasses? There they are. It says, but Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it so severely, ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. Ruth was at a point where she needed to make a commitment. Remember, Ruth was from Moab. As far as the Hebrews were concerned, she's coming from a place that they didn't particularly like. But Ruth was from a place that actually had plenty at the time. Israel at the time had been going through famine. Naomi and their family had been there for over 10 years in Moab because there had been issues going on in the Canaan area. But now it was time to return. And Ruth had a decision to make. In the words of the old song, should I stay or should I go? If she stayed, she would have been comfortable. Yes, she was a widower, but she was a widow, so that would have allowed for her to remarry, and she could have gone into a line there in Moab. But she decided to do something different. See, she had learned from Naomi about this God of Israel. She had learned about this people of Israel, and she decided, you know, I'm going to take a less trodden road. I'm going to take a road that's filled of uncertainty, but I know that there's something, there's got to be something good about that. Young people, you guys sit at that same crossroad. Should I stay at home in mama's house in the basement, eating mama's food for the rest of her life? Mama already shaking her head like this. I don't care how much you do that. Or should I venture out? For the past 3 weeks, these types of conversations have been coming up. I was talking with Brian Davison, his wife, and had another conversation in my supervision class in counseling, all about the same thing. It's like, what happens when you're just ready to launch? For Ruth, that first thing was she had to commit. She had to make a commitment. But her first commitment was to God. Her first commitment was to family. And young people, that's the same commitment that you make. See, if you start off that beginning journey right there with God, right there with family, then what that does is it places you on very much solid footing. And he starts you on your correct journey to where he wants you to go. And when you do that, you open yourself up for those richly rewards. What's that? What are you talking about there? Boaz in the second chapter makes a reply. Boaz replies, I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. How you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with the people you didn't know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. God's promising that with the commitment that you put in him, that he will richly reward you. But he is taking that reward and says this reward is more than just trinkets. Reward is more than just money. Reward is more than just a paycheck. Reward becomes more like the richness of family, the richness of love, the richness of peace. See, when we start to look at rewards just at what a monetary gift that it can be, what it ends up is it limits us. It limits our scope on what happiness might be. I was watching a news thing the other day that was talking about families, and they said that the amount that is considered to be happiness is $75,000 a year. The next report was about how people were struggling to live off of $75,000 a year. Happiness is on life support. But it's not the money. Because if that's where you're putting your happiness, then you're missing out. You've missed the full breadth of what that richness of God is. Because when God says that he's going to reward you richly, he's rewarding you out of his abundance. And his abundance encompasses far greater than just what the treasury can supply for you. His abundance supplies for you that kindness that you need in a lonely island. His abundance applies for you that peace you need when all is breaking loose at the job that you have decided to take. His abundance applies to you when the enemies seem to be all around you and you can't seem to find any friends, except for this one little lady that just seems to just find you in the lunchroom because of your big smile and sits down next to you and maybe just says something new that just makes you smile, that becomes a good friend. It's that piece of music that you can go to that just quiets your soul when all else around you is driving you mad, especially adjudications and judgments. And you know what I'm talking about, right? That one thing that can go back and just sparks your love all over again. God's riches is not limited just to treasures and monetary trinkets. And then it says it places you under his wings. That's one of my favorites. Psalms 91 is one of my favorite psalms because it talks about how I'm in God's secret dwelling place. Under the wings means that I am covered. I have taken refuge. That means I don't have to worry about what's coming out against me because I am protected. God has me under his wings. So, in other words, once you start down that road, and you take on that commitment in Christ, you are now eligible for the riches that God has for you and under his protection. Now, if that's where you are, that means, all right, well, then maybe that means skies are clear and I can drive a little bit further. So let's start doing this. So they drove a little bit further, and they hit toll number two. Toll number two is that your diligent efforts yields favor regardless of presumed position. Now, in the story of Ruth, what you have to remember is that when they get back into Israel, she's a widow. She's with her mother, who is also a widow, and they have name claim to the land that is owned by their husbands, but that's really about it. So, but it's kind of sitting in the holds of the family. So in order for them to be able to get food, what do they have to do? Well, they had to go to someone else's fields and actually glean from their fields, and they had to depend on the kindness of the people who owned the other fields. So Ruth, being the industrious young woman that she is, she's like, all right, I got to take care of Naomi. We assume that she's much older. She goes into a field. And when she goes into the field, she goes to work. Young people, I don't care what it is that you do. When you get there, go to work. It doesn't matter how hard the job, how menial the task. You go in it going to work. You put your whole heart into it. You work as hard as you can. You don't do C work when you get there. You do A++ work. It's like you go into, if you were to use a class analogy, you go into the lowest class, but you do AP work. Because when you do that, see, that effort is seen by other people. That effort is seen by the folks that really, really matter. Now, I'm sure all of you have been in a class, and we had this conversation, so I know, so you're going to better admit it, have been in a class where everybody is doing bad on the exams. And they're like, look, if you fail the exam, then the curve is going to be nice, and then we all get to come up, right? You ever been in there? Y'all must be smart folks, because I've been in that class. ain't going to say what I did because I'm trying to keep a good image. But, but you know, you get that, right? They don't want you to do the very best that you have because they feel like, well, you know, you're going to show me up. Let me tell you, never be tired in well-doing. Because when you do well, when you do that, you are seen by who is important to be seen by. You're going to encounter teachers that are just the worst of the worst, and they're going to work you hard. And it's going to seem like, you know what, they have no care for me. But they do it a lot of times because they want you, they love you, and they want to see you do well. I had an organic chemistry professor, actually a general chem professor, who worked me like a dog. He was like, I do C work. He was like, yeah, do it again. But do it again. Graduate school. I'm in my first class having to counsel with people. So I'm learning. I'm learning this stuff. I'm like, all right, you know, you got to be more empathetic and all that. I'm like, okay, got this, you know. And it seemed like he was just being so coddling to the other people. And he was like, you come in after class. Matter of fact, 2 hours before class, you come here, I'm reviewing your tapes. Like, okay. So 2 hours before class, the class was already 3 hours long. So I got 5 hours worth of counseling stuff to do. Okay, Dr. Tsai. Now, why didn't you say that? Well, I thought, no, don't say that. What was that? Like, oh. And he worked that. By the end of that class, I was doing a whole lot better. I still wasn't where he wanted me to be, but I'm still getting there, Dr. Tsai. But he did it, but I appreciated it. Come towards graduation, when I'm sitting with some other students who hadn't been through a professor like that, you know, they were like, well, you know, this course was so easy. It was easy to get through. You know, our professor did this. Our professor did this. You know, our write-ups were like five pages. Like, Dr. Tsai's write-up was 25. And I had to do 2 more hours. And I appreciated it. Because the hard work that he had me do showed up later on when I had cases that, it's like, all right, where am I going to go with this? How am I going to be of help to this person who needs it right now? How am I, you know, wait a minute, I see them doing something that, oh, that's what that is. But that was because of his tutoring. That was because of what he told me. It's like, you just keep working hard. You keep working hard, young people, this is what you're going to end up. You're going to appreciate the hard work that you do. And not only do you appreciate it, but those above you will appreciate it. Matter of fact, in Ruth, the foreman, when Boaz gets back, the boss gets back, the foreman walks up to Boaz and says, look, you see that Moabite woman out there? Said, she's the Moabite woman who came back with Naomi. She came to us and said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvester. So she knew who she was. She was honest about who she was. She didn't have any pretense. She went into the field and worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the field. Be honest. Gave you a formula. Be honest. 2, work diligently. Be about your job. And then take your rest. Rest is important. If you don't rest, then you burn out. And then you're no good to nobody. So take rest. Do your work. Take the appropriate work, appropriate rest, and then get back to it again. Because when you do that, you're refreshed. And people see what it is that you're supposed to do. One of the things that came up from our conversations was that we wanted to see just how well this little process worked. And I'm going, well, you know, what is it that I'm looking forward to if I do all of this? if I do this, you know, and what kind of reward am I going to get? Verse 8 says, Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girl. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along with the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water drawers that the men have filled. Ruth replied, may I continue to find favor in your eyes, my lord. You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls. Your hard work gives you a reward of favor. Your hard work gives you a reward of favor. See, he ended up elevating her from just, as the law might have said, another peasant that was just going to get from the things that were left over in the field, to saying, I want you to have something out of the abundance of the field. You don't get that going into a job, going into school. Man, this test hard. It's too much homework. You don't get that. But when a teacher sees that you're trying, even though you're getting a C, she's willing to give you the extra help. When you have brilliant people like my boy Rasan over here, I know you never has to have to worry about a C, but he gets to go to another place where he can start to experiment even more on things. It's like, and pull even more out of the lesson. I've seen him do it. He keeps me on my toes. And that's what you do. See, you're going there for one reason. You're going to school for one reason and one reason only. To try to learn more about who you are. To gain all the knowledge that you can so that you can go and change this world around you. If that's the attitude that you have, there's nothing that they can take from you. So now your car's got a little bit more fuel in it, right? We're going to keep on down this road until we get to number three. Toll number three. I'm sorry for all these tolls, but you know. Government needs the money.
Right.
Toll number three is to make yourself available. Ruth, the third chapter, and I really, really loved it because the Ruth in the third chapter, if you start reading at the first verse, it says, one day Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, who is with whose servant girl you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight, he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor. But don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go, uncover his feet, and lie down. He will tell you what to do. Now, listening to that, well, let's take a step back. First of all, let's look at Boaz. Okay? Boaz was her king's redeemer, her kinsman redeemer. Okay? So in order for her to get married, she had to be married to someone within the family. All right? So Naomi was trying to let her know, all right, for you to get married, this person is one of the people that's available. So I want you to prepare yourself. I want you to make yourself available. Okay? I want you to clean yourself up, and then I want you to go to the place where he is. I want you to make yourself available. Now, this is not just a female-male thing. Making yourself available. Okay? Because making yourself available can have a number of different meanings. One of the first things about making themselves available was that she was very, very careful of how she presented herself. She maintained her nobility. Young people, you have to maintain your nobility because you will be thrust into places where sometimes it's questionable. The atmosphere, man, not you. The atmosphere. See, Naomi was sending her to the threshing floor. The threshing floor is where they cleaned the barley, where they took away the pieces that they were going to use and everything that wasn't was going to be thrown away. This was a man's job, not necessarily because of how hard it was, but because of how vulnerable the crop was at that time. Because now all the workers are not in the field. They're now in this one place. You have all of your crops available. So now if somebody's going to rob you, they're going to come and get it now. So the men were normally there to help glean, winnow the barley, as well as to protect it from outside forces. Well, what happens, unfortunately, when you get a bunch of working guys together? There's normally a little revelry that kind of takes place. So there's a little drinking and loud music and things, and other people come visit that probably shouldn't be there. That was the reason why Naomi said to Ruth, don't let it be seen that you were there, because she didn't want her to be confused as someone who shouldn't be there.
Just make it plain.
You get me? Okay. I just wanted to make sure you got me. Right, not one of the other women. Right, right. He wanted to be the noble women. Okay, not one of the, gotcha. Okay, but Ruth did present herself that way. See, the nobility that the people in the field saw was the same nobility that she showed even in this situation. Because she could have really compromised Boaz's position. Yes, yeah, she could have gone and laid at his feet and could have done other things, and because he was inebriated, you know, hey, she could have taken advantage of the situation. Because she was also desperate. Because, again, remember, she had nothing. He had everything. She could have taken advantage of the situation, but she didn't. Instead, she laid at his feet, curled up, just waiting for him to awake. And when he awoke, she said, just take the corner of your robe and place it over me. And what that said to her, what that would say is that I am available to marry. I am available to marry. That is it.
Break it down. Break it down.
No farther than that. I am available to marry, and I am making myself available to you. That is it. You understand? Okay? You see, that is as far as you have to go. That is it. Young men, you want to make yourself available to marry. You want to be the type of man that Boaz was, that a woman would want to make herself available to you. But that means that you have to prepare yourself just as well. You got to be about your business. Because if you're not about your business, she's not going to want to come over here. She's not there to take care of you. You are there to take care of her. Now, don't get me wrong. It's okay. It's okay if she makes more money. I ain't about that. It's not about that. Because, again, we're going back into these riches thing. This riches thing, this isn't about money.
That's right.
Are you there to protect her? Are you there to love her? Are you there to support her dreams? Are you there to be that uplift when she needs to stand up because somebody is beating her down? Young lady, are you there to love him? Are you there to protect him? Are you there to nurture him. Yeah, everybody can cook. But that's true. But are you there to nurture him? One of the things that I'm loving about our marriage ministry, that love and respect thing, it goes hand in hand. No role is more important than the other, because if you're too out of whack in either one, there's going to be resentment somewhere, and it fights against one another. So your preparation as a man, your preparation as a woman is extraordinarily important. Because as you are prepared, well, the things that are going to be made available to you. And see, that's what Ruth was. She was prepared. She made a way. And if you need a process to make a way, I finally found it in the Bible. I was looking for it. I finally found it. It's in Galatians 6. Galatians 6, 4 through 5. So here's a process for you. Galatians 6, 4 through 5 in the Message Bible says, make a careful exploration of who you are and the work you have been given. And then sink yourself into that. That means take a look at your talents. Take a look at the things that you do well as the things you struggle at. Okay? Because that's important. So often we want to stick with the things that we do good and the things that are easy for us and say, oh, yeah, this is what I want to do. No, look at those things that you struggle at. Math might not be the easiest thing for you, but your ability to solve problems really does have. There might be something there that God's trying to point towards you. Okay? Point you towards. So examine yourself and be honest about what you see. If there are things that you need to improve, improve it. Don't shy away from it. Because all you're going to do is strengthen yourself even more. Don't be impressed with yourself. I think that's self-explanatory. Let me say that again. Don't be impressed with yourself. Don't compare yourself with others. All right, now let's put a pin right there. Don't compare yourself with others. You are not in any place. You're not in school. You're not in band. You're not in sports competing with no one else except for yourself. If you go into an environment saying, I just got to beat this person, I just got to beat this person, what it is you take your focus off of what's more important. You're not going to improve. Now, there's a way of doing it because I'm a competitive guy. I like to win. Okay, I like to win. Look, that Spades game was not an indicator of my attitude towards anything. I have a competitive wife. I can't help it. Yep, see? See, what you need to do is to be in competition with yourself. Okay? It's okay. It is okay to have someone to use as a measuring stick to say, all right, I know it. My skills are there. This person's skills are here. So what you do, you play against them. Since they're better, play against them. You know, because you learn the things that they're doing better. You know, you go back to your instructor, I'm doing these things better, but, you know, help me improve. Because you are measuring yourself against yourself. If you beat yourself every day, then you are getting better every day. You started off in January, you could do one push-up. I know Anika didn't let you stop at that, but you could do one push-up. One good one. You may have done 10 really bad ones, but one good one. So your goal for you is not to do as many push-ups as I'm doing. Your goal for you is to say, all right, I'm going to get the 3. And when you get the 3, I can get the 5. My daughter, I love her to death, goes to a music school, or went to a music school. And one of the things that, when she was preparing to go, Miss Beth told her, was that you're not in competition with anybody else there. Your voice is your voice. You're going there to find your voice. You're going there to find what's unique about you. No matter what comes against you, don't worry about everybody else, what they're doing, what other bands they're playing in, what kind of who gets the lead roles or whatever. Don't worry about that. You're there to find your voice. Young people, you're here to find your voice. And everyone that you see around here is here to help you find your voice. So keep striving to find your voice. Each one of you must take responsibility for doing the creative best you can with your own life. My example for that is A.J. Fobbs. A.J.'s not here with us. He's at visiting an engineering school up at Johnson & Wales. But the reason I use A.J. is because A.J. lets nothing get in his way. As a young man, A.J. he graduated from National Honor Society, had a way high GPA average, higher than mine when I graduated from high school, has an engineering brain, has a desire to become an automotive engineer. He wants to design. But A.J. isn't yet in his college of choice. Now, for some people, that would have stopped them. For some people, that would have ended their course right there. He got creative. He was like, all right, I'm going to start up a tutoring business so I can stay fresh in math. I'm going to look into the community college so I can take some drafting classes so that I can, you know, bone up on some skills that I don't have. I'm going to take a look at a couple of other schools that are available to me so that I can get the amount of money I need so that I can go to the school, get my education, move to my next graduate level so I can get the job that I want. He was about his business. Let me take it from another level. And he didn't know I was going to say anything about this, so he'll probably beat me up here in a little bit, but that's okay. There's a young man in the audience, and I call him a young man because I consider him one, by the name of Don Broadnax. Don Broadnax, if you allow him to describe himself, would say that he's not the smartest man out there. But that never stopped Don, as he is a business owner, as he supports a very loving family, as he's about to marry a very beautiful young lady. Y'all kicked your covers, bro. It's okay. But see, he never allowed for that to stop him. Why do I use those two? Because they went down two very different paths on the same road. He had a destination that he was going to get to, and he was not going to allow anything that society defined for him as the steps to be successful to get in his way. He's like, I'm going to make my own path. Do your creative best to get to where it is that you want to go. And don't let nothing stop you. If the finances aren't there the first year, fine. Take that year off, work, and then go back to school. If the finances are there, then do your job. Hit it and hit it hard. Go in there and get more than what you're paying for. You don't go to class just to get the A. You go to class to become the expert. Come on. I mean, think about it. If you go in there just to get the A, what have you done? All you've done is pass the test. That's it. You've passed the test. That is your mark in life. But if you go in there to be the expert, you're going in there to pull out of it what you think you need to move forward. Think about those guys that go into computer class and then they come out, they've created an app that they're now selling to people. That wasn't a part of the test. But no, they went out to get what it is that they needed, what they wanted out of it. Forget what the teacher wants. Go out and become the expert. You give them a challenge in the class. You sit in there like, all right, I got this, but can I take it a little deeper? Because I just need to understand what it is that you're saying. You know? You take it to that next level. And the more you take it to that next level, trust me, the more you're going to be seen. The more that they're going to say, take notice of that person. I took notice of that Rasan guy. I like him. Maybe, you know, we got this internship coming up. Let me talk to you. Let me just talk to you a little bit. You know, that's how it works. That's how it works. You want to get on that inside track? That's how it works. Last thing here, and to me it's the most important. Last point is relying on your King's Redeemer. In the fourth chapter of Ruth, what you see is a conversation between Boaz and the King's Redeemer and the other kinsman redeemer. Okay? See, at that point, Ruth had to put basically her destiny in another person's hands. Young people, we all have our destiny in someone else's hands. But what is for you is for you. You see, when he went to talk to this kinsman redeemer, this kinsman, you know, he told him, you know, hey, there's this land that Naomi has that I'm going to purchase. And, you know, since you're first in line, I'm going to give it to you. You know, you can purchase it if you like. Oh, and by the way, you have to marry Ruth. And this guy's response was basically, well, that puts my inheritance in jeopardy. Well, why did it put it in jeopardy? That was my question as I was going through. Why was it in jeopardy? Was it in jeopardy because of a status issue? He didn't want to be linked with the Moabite woman? How many times have people not wanted to be with us because they thought we were below them? Young people, you are below no one. You are blessed and highly favored. So it wasn't that. Could it have been that, you know, could this have been another Perez and Tamar, I mean, excuse me, Judah and Tamar situation? You know, he knew that any children or the land wasn't going to be his. It was going to be, you know, in the name of Elimelech and in the name of Ruth's husband. You know, was it going to be that? You know, and it just wasn't his. You know, he wanted to have his fortune, and this wasn't going to be his fortune should, you know, it become something great. Maybe. Maybe. But notice how there was never, ever a situation where it wasn't going to end up that Ruth was going to get what she was supposed to get. Because Boaz said, if you don't redeem it, I will. Your hands are in, or your future is the hands of your God. Your God is your King's Redeemer. Your God is the one who is going to make sure that your future is redeemed to where it is that you're going to go. Your God is going to make sure that you are restored from where you were. I don't care what you lost, to the fullness of what he has for you. Your God is going to be the one that avenges those that fight against you. See, all of these are the jobs of the kinsman redeemer. And that is the job that your God serves. And that is the one he has signed up for. So, young people, as you are on this road, I want you to remember to stand firm, to stand committed, to be diligent about what it is that you have to do. And as you move forward, remember your kinsman redeemer. Remember the God who sacrificed it all for you. And since this is Fourth Sunday, we get to celebrate in what it is that he has sacrificed for us, giving his life for us. So at this time, we're going to prepare the sanctuary for communion.